Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
We're in for a treat today, Fred. We're going to talk about the origin of echolocation.
Or the list of problems with the evolution of echolocation.
Yeah, and you know what the biggest problem they have is? Well, for the atheist theory for the origin of echolocation, their biggest problem is they don't have a theory.
Yeah.
They don't have a clue how this happens.
No
later,
idea.
We'll get to the journal Science, but Fred, they really don't have a clue. So that's one problem. They don't have a theory. But then they have plenty of other problems too. Like what happens when they look at the DNA? What happens when they look at the genes of bats and whales?
Well, they find that they have astounding similarities. Astounding or astonishing. I mean, that's what they actually say. Even though by their theory, bats and whales are not supposed to be closely related, right?
On the tree of life, Darwin's tree of life, they're supposed to be far apart, right?
Yep. No common ancestor.
Yeah. And no common ancestor that has echolocation. So if you wonder how many similarities are there between, say, bats and whales, right?
Well, not only is a primary main hearing gene called Preston, it's astoundingly similar.
Okay.
They've now found similarities in 200 different genes. You know, genes is a big packet of programming information. Just one gene is.
Like maybe 100 amino acids long or more.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, right.
And now they found similarities in 200 of these genes.
200 of them. So, and there's no common descent to explain those 200 similar genes.
Yep.
Between a bat and a whale. So that blows out of the water. Is this true or am I exaggerating this, Fred? That blows out of the water, as we've been saying on this program for decades, that any similarities can be used as evidence of common descent.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've had this problem, Bob, with convergence for a long time. This one's really going to drive home an even more important point that we're going to get to later.
This show is going to be a good show. To expose the fallacy of convergence as an excuse. It's like the dark matter of the evolutionist.
Yeah. And there's a huge takeaway that we're going to expose that comes from this similarity in the genes.
And so the similarity, homology, it's called. When you look at creatures that have limbs, and on the ends of their limbs, they have five digits. So what have the evolutionists said for 150 years now? They've said, well, those five digits, that is proof that they've had a common ancestor.
Yeah.
But Fred, if echolocation could develop, they think it evolved independently in creatures as disparate as bats and whales and dolphins. Well, then what does that say about their theory's ability to look at similar features, homology, and say that they're evidence of common descent? If echolocation, or you've often pointed out eyesight, right? Vision has evolved independently according to Darwinists.
Yeah, they say at least 40 separate times because, for example, the octopus has an eye that's very similar to our human eye. But we don't have a common ancestor. Our common ancestor is like supposedly way, 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 way down on the evolutionary tree.
Yeah, you have to go practically to the sponge, not really, but to get a common ancestor between an octopus and a human being on their theory. And so yet our eyes, the camera type eye that we have, that's why when people look at an octopus, it's so uncanny because it stays stationary, but its eyes follow you. You know, it freaks people out at an aquarium. So this independent evolution, they call it convergence of the same features, the same design here, the same DNA, the same genes. And what that means is they can no longer claim that, well, because there's five digits at the end of your limbs, you must have a common ancestor with that creature over there, because why can't it just be convergent? Why can't five digits just happen?
Yep. The whole theory of evolution has been squeezed beyond recognition into an entire discipline built on, what, selection bias?
Yeah, just use the kind of data choices and the variations in your theory that will give you the results that you need to convince yourself, and then voila, you've confirmed your belief system.
You got a smorgasbord of little answers that you can kind of convince yourself that you're right.
So Echolocation, let's describe it.
Okay.
You're an engineer.
Okay, I'll do my best. So, Bob, the echolocation in animals is like radar in an airplane, but like way more sophisticated.
Now, are you just joking or is it really more sophisticated? It really is, isn't it?
It's light years more sophisticated.
A radar installation sends out a radio signal and an antenna listens for a reflection, an echo, if you will, to bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, there's a submarine, there's a fighter jet, there's a hot air balloon, whatever.
Yeah, and it's this far away and that kind of thing. You can track, you know, obviously air traffic controllers use, you know, radar.
Sure. Well, a few animals can do that, but with sound waves.
Okay.
You and I, Fred, we've been talking about evolution's big squeeze, and echolocation is one way in which that theory is squeezed beyond the breaking point.
Yeah, so how can it be that bats and whales and dolphins can perform echolocation?
Right. Now, there's an admission that they did not, like we've said, they did not inherit that ability from one another. They admit that they don't have a common ancestor from which these marine creatures and the bats inherited this ability to echolocate.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And what an extraordinary ability it is. So, Bob, you looking for food?
If you're hungry?
Yeah. All out of food stamps? Let loose a high-pitched click or chirp.
Yeah.
Or really a complex series of sounds.
Right.
And then listen for the echo to come back. And then guess what? If you're a bat, maybe you've found yourself a beetle, a moth, and then you can dive right in and chow down.
Okay. It sounds so gross, doesn't it?
It does.
Fred, we had a moth on our front porch the last few days. It was not moving. I don't know why. Massive, 3.5 inches. I took a photograph of it, sent it into the Denver Museum. I've done that before. And it's just a really astounding, but the thought of eating a moth is so gross.
Well, you know, I was heading into the pizza store today.
Yeah.
And there's a grasshopper on the door handle.
Oh, now, okay.
And, you know, John the Baptist chowed down on those things, and I don't know how he did it.
That chocolate covered.
It was not chocolate.
And
it would not move. So I had to kind of take my finger and lightly, you know, open the door from the top.
Grasshoppers, we grew up with playing with those things. But, hey, ants, if you're, you know, desperate, you could sort of bake them in the sun and then crinkle them up, put them crumbles on your salad if you need protein.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
They might not taste great. But if you're a whale and the echo you get from your effort, if it sounds like salmon.
Now, that's better.
Then
salmon,
go for it. Oh, yeah. If it sounds like a squid, even especially a large squid, you know, yum. Now, if you're a dolphin, Fred, you're not. There was a movie where a guy turned into a dolphin.
Yeah, I wish I were a fish.
That our producer obviously got some dolphin recordings. Thank you for that. If you're a dolphin, they also. Now, that's not an echolocation sound. They echolocate with their clicks.
The clicks.
Yeah. Not with their squeaks and all their other interesting sounds. But a dolphin might hear an echo that sounds just like a herring. Or a mackerel. Or, hey, you're on the Cape. How about a cod?
Okay.
So what an astounding ability. So how does it happen? Now, of course, God could design such an engineering marvel. But if there were no God, as atheists fantasize, that there were no God, then how is this supposed to happen?
Yeah. So if there's no God, they believe in chance mutations, which means mistakes without foresight or intention.
Oh, boy.
And just happen by these chance mutations and natural selection.
All right.
Then we'll discuss how impossible that actually is.
Yeah, that'll be fun to do. But first, let's talk a bit about how echolocation works. Now, Fred, what do you think about mosquitoes?
Mosquitoes?
You like mosquitoes?
Well, you know, after careful consideration, Bob, I don't like them.
You don't like them. Well, me neither. You know, their original purpose, perhaps God designed such creatures as a contingency for the fall, you know, entropy slowly degrading the world's ecosystems. Maybe they did things like viruses do. You know, maybe they were microtransfusions.
Yeah, or so they were useful.
HGT. Beneficial. Yeah, horizontal gene transfer for lower organisms, maybe as a way of spreading natural immunization. But as sin continues to wreak havoc on the earth, even the immune systems fail. You know, so mosquitoes, personally, I hate them.
Oh, yeah.
I just hate them.
They're the worst.
So they are. And regardless of what their original purpose was, today, they're worse than a nuisance. They're carriers of disease. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like dengue fever, Zika.
Yeah.
West Nile virus, of course.
Yeah.
I've heard of that one. Malaria, which is really bad.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we can go on and on.
And so many others. So I'd like to thank our friendly neighborhood bats for their voracious appetite and their nightly consumption of mosquitoes.
Oh, they
Fred.
Chow down big time on these things.
They really eat them. So how many mosquitoes and mosquito-sized insects, how many can they eat in a night, in an evening of feeding?
In an evening of feeding, 1,000 an hour, which is about 7,000 of those critters a night.
Come on,
7,000.
Really?
So if you've got a bat living nearby, you know, leave it alone. What? He's doing you a big favor.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and they do that hunting mostly at night, and at night, it turns out it's usually dark. Like, I can make a prediction, Fred, that it will grow darker later today.
Yeah.
And in the morning, begin to light up.
And I've never lived in Alaska, so it may be getting dark
this
time of year.
I've gone up there a couple times where at midnight at Manly Hot Springs, far north of Fairbanks, where I was reading my Bible in our tent at midnight without a light, without a lamp, without a flashlight. That's how light it's there.
And our friend Russ lives up there. He's a producer of RSR.
Long time ago, producer of Real Science Radio.
He was there when we did our promo at Red Rocks. Remember that? Red Rocks promo when we were the ape men?
The cavemen. Yeah, that's a great photo. It's not Photoshopped. So, Fred, okay, they do that hunting at night when it's typically dark. There are over 1,000 bat species, about 1,300, and they don't all hunt insects, but most of them do. Are they blind? You know the expression, blind as a bat?
Yeah, blind as a bat. They are not blind. That's a myth.
Mm.
But most species can hunt extremely well in the dark by their echolocation. But they use both, actually. They use sight and echolocation.
In fact, how was it discovered that they can echolocate? Do you know that bit of history?
Well, so most were known to be, you know, nocturnal. We just talked about that.
So that's how the myth arose, that they were blind.
Yeah. So at Harvard University, back in the 1930s, you know, as they're turning more and more secular and atheistic, they blindfolded bats, and they were still able to avoid obstacles.
That's a good idea, right?
Yeah.
A little weird, you know, to put little masks.
Yeah, bat blinders.
Bat blinders. Yeah, okay, so they blindfolded them, and they let them fly, like, through a maze.
Yeah.
And they didn't knock themselves out.
And then they covered their ears, and they could avoid obstacles.
Oh, smart. But how about when they covered both their eyes and their ears? Well, then they were rather clumsy.
Well, all bets were off or all bats were off.
So think about a colony of bats leaving their haunt in the evening. They go out hunting. And let's think through. We're going to follow a single bat.
Okay.
And he's coming up to his first catch of the night, a mosquito. Now, imagine how small, how slight most mosquitoes are. And this bat, in a couple of minutes, now we could think back to when he was allegedly first evolving this ability, but let's do that a little later. And for now, Fred, let's behave like a typical evolutionist and assume that the feature you have to explain how it originated, let's just assume it already exists.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do with stars, with genes, with species, with universes, with life. They always assume, well, it already exists. And then they tell you how another one came around.
Yeah. And it's funny. You can see more of that at rsr.org/atheism.
Oh, that's
kind of ironic.
That's right. We give a great list to that. So anyway, this bat, he wants to eat a mosquito and it's dark out. So he lets out a chirp. Now, it's a chirp that we can't hear, right?
Mm-hmm. They're ultrasonic at up to 200,000 cycles per second.
Whoa.
And, you know, we as humans, we can hear, what, up to about maybe 20,000?
Yeah.
So 10 times less.
Whoa. Yeah, middle C is only 440 vibrations per second.
440.
So at 20,000 hertz. Now, senior citizens can't hear 20,000 young people. You said that we people, humans, could hear that, but yeah.
Huh? What?
In fact, middle-aged adults can't hear. Maybe 14,000 we could hear. Not much beyond that. So, Fred, up to 200,000 cycles per second. That frequency is 10 times faster or 10 times higher than what a young person could hear. And that's the upper end of a bat's echolocation. So you've got this flying rodent. It lets out this sound and it has to echo back. It has to bounce back to him off of his prey. Say it's a moth 10 feet away and you've got to emit a sound and then listen for the echo.
The echo off of a moth. I mean, this thing's flying, right? He's moving around.
Right.
You know, they've got pretty good aerodynamics. They can go diagonal. You know, they're like a really complex helicopter.
Yeah, to hear the echo off of a moth. Either this bat is going to hear the echo off of a moth or go on a forced diet. He's going to either have to trim down or catch that echo. What an engineering marvel. So consider how loud the emitted signal has to be. If you're going to make an echo off of a moth, obviously you need to start with a loud signal.
Yeah. And, you know, scientists, they greatly underestimated how loudly the bats had to emit these signals.
Yeah. That volume. You know, if they were listening to Real Science Radio and Bob and Hear Live back in the 1990s, Fred, they wouldn't have been so wrong on their estimates. For comparison, a garbage disposal system, like in your kitchen sink, or a full-size vacuum cleaner, they're about 70 decibels, up to 80 decibels.
And if you don't take out the trash, 90 decibels? We both love our wives very much. Oh, but, sometimes I do forget to take out the trash. 90 decibels.
Now, scientists used to think that these small bats emitted sounds that even though at such high frequencies that we couldn't hear them, but that they were so loud with such intensity that they had about the loudness of a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, so more recently, they discovered, again, that they had underestimated the bat's decibels.
Mm.
So you mentioned a vacuum cleaner up to 80 decibels. A gas-powered lawnmower is, what, about 90 decibels?
Whoa.
And a bat, according to a recent paper in the journal Frontiers in Physiology,
all right,
some bats could emit echolocation signal at 110 decibels. That's really, really loud.
Yeah, it is loud. And obviously you want to hear an echo off of an insect. So you got to start with a really loud sound.
And you're getting really close to like a siren or a rock concert because those are about 120 decibels.
So 120 decibels for a siren. And when they look at other bat species, louder bats, they're thought of as open space hunting bats. Really, there's a lot of overlap in their research. But they have been recorded at 135 decibels. So we're really talking, the ranges are about 30% louder than the earlier estimates in 2005 and then confirmed in 2008 in the journals PLOS ONE and Experimental Biology. They found out that some of these bats can emit calls up to 140 decibels and beyond.
So again, Bob, that's way louder than a siren or a rock concert.
Yeah, wow. So to our listeners, this is not surprising because it's been many years we've been talking about how loud these signals must be to produce a usable echo off of a moth or even worse, off of a mosquito.
Yeah, a tiny mosquito.
So, wow. So remember our bat, right? It's out there flying and there's a moth also flying 10 feet away from it. And the bat emits this loud sound, so it makes an echo off of the moth. But the echo itself, when it comes back to the bat, is the echo going to be loud?
The echo itself is not going to be loud. No. So
an echo off of a moth or a mosquito, it can't be loud. It's got to be barely audible. Barely.
This is an interesting engineering problem. So how are the bats going to hear this echo and yet be able to survive this loud noise they just emitted?
Okay, because their hearing has to be so sensitive. A lot of bats have oversized ears.
Yep.
for the size of their entire body, the size of their head. They got these big ears. Why do they have such big ears? Because they have to hear an echo off of a mosquito. Could you imagine an echo? You played a band.
I wonder,
right,
if Ross,
Fred?
Perot had echolocation. That's dating us, isn't it?
Yeah. You play in a band, you have?
I have, yes.
And, you know, you hear the echo, you get in a big open hall, especially before the people are there. You hit the snare drum and it echoes. Well, imagine that there was a mosquito flying in the hall and the drummer hits the snare drum and he says, "There's a mosquito in this room. I just heard the echo off of the mosquito." I mean, there's no way.
Yeah.
So the hearing has to be so wildly sensitive that the bat can hear these echoes.
Yeah, to discern that specific echo, I mean, it's an engineering marvel.
Yes. And they could even hear the echo of a gnat. Bats like to eat gnats.
A gnat?
And those those gnats, they are tiny. In fact, Fred, imagine if you challenged an evolutionist atheist, say he's an engineer, right? And you say, go ahead, build a sensitive radar and let it work like a bat's with the same size constraints, mobility, infrastructure constraints, and then test your system, see if it can accurately track the trajectory of a gnat, and then just for fun, use the gnat as fuel to power the whole system.
That's true.
Do that.
Because the gnat is indeed food.
Yes. So the bat's ears must be so sensitive that they would go deaf as soon as they emitted their first blast, yeah, their first signal.
Yeah. So again, part of the engineering problem here is, how do you deal with that? Well, God is designer.
Yeah.
There's a safety mechanism.
Oh, and it's so brilliant. The same mechanism that releases the signal protects the ear. How many generations of deaf bats did it take to evolve that mechanism?
Unbelievable. I mean, it really is a fairy tale for adults, Bob.
Yeah.
To think that this happened by, again, mistakes in the DNA and then some blind selection process.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously a system that all the parts have to be there from the beginning.
Yes.
It's a feedback system. It cannot evolve independently by single steps.
Right. And you're speaking as an engineer. Who could possibly list all the absurdities in the evolutionist idea of how this came about? So, Fred, let's take a stab at that. Let's describe an echolocation evolution algorithm. Let's describe some of the constraints.
Okay.
So, what's going to happen? How in the world you've got some rodent-like creature?
Okay. Well, you know, so one of their tenets is natural selection. But it can't help with the origin of echolocation until it begins to provide some sort of survival advantage.
Oh, this is like our Trochlea challenge to P.Z.
Yep.
Myers,
yep,
one of the world's leading, most well-known evolutionists. And we asked him, we showed him, we commissioned an artist to draw a sketch of the Trochlea in the human vision system. And we said, P.Z. Myers, could you just explain roughly, a rough algorithm, how could Darwinism bring about that trochlea? It's like a pulley system. How could it happen? Just rough, no details, just a rough outline.
Top-down design, come on.
And he said, no, I have no idea. I can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, to his credit, that was honest. It doesn't mean he's wrong, but it does mean with a career's worth of research, the simplest part of the vision system, not the most complicated, the simplest thing, they don't have the foggiest notion how the trochlea, if anybody wants to Google that trochlea challenge, T-R-O-C-H-L-E-A, trochlea challenge.
It's a great image. It really drives the point home because this little muscle has to go through this slit. And not only that, it's on either side, right? Both eyes have the same
both
thing.
Eyes
so it has
this,
to evolve on both sides
so fun,
the same way.
Right?
There's no way that happens by chance and selection.
So the same thing here, the echolocation system. Now, there could be different parts, right? But the bat has hearing. The bat is able to emit sounds. The bat has a brain, all that stuff. The bat has wings, so it could move to where its prey is. But echolocation as a system, I mean, it's an identifiable discrete system. It's different than all the other parts.
Mm-hmm.
So natural selection cannot begin to help the evolutionist explain the origin of echolocation until the system itself began to provide some kind of survival advantage.
Yep.
So it has to be functioning before their number one mechanism, natural selection, could help.
And it's functioning in two, in three vastly different organisms that are so far apart on the Darwinian tree of life.
Oh,
it's so amazing.
You're talking about whales and bats and dolphins.
Yep.
Okay, so right off the bat, they're in a crisis because natural selection, which they want to be their hero of the plot, really it's time, right? Millions, billions of years is their hero. Time is a variable. It's not a mechanism. Time doesn't do anything for you. But to them, time is the magician that they put their blind faith in.
Hide behind time.
But other than time, then there are mutations, which are mistakes, and natural selection. It's about all they got. And natural selection can't help until echolocation is working, at least at some rudimentary level. So then you look at the different parts. And let's say hearing, right? Well, hearing is as different from echolocation as taste is from knowing how to catch a fish, right? Just because you can taste that something is good doesn't mean that you know how to fish. So the evolutionist, they always want to start with the existence of the feature that they're trying to explain how it originated. So, okay, they're going to start with a fully functional creature that has a great sense of hearing and it sort of knows how to echolocate. It's like, this is cheating. It's cheating from the very beginning. But now that sense of hearing, it has to be transformed. It has to be weaponized into, you know what we called it, Fred, at McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company? We called it a target acquisition designation system.
Are you allowed to tell me that?
TADS. Well, yeah. But I'll shoot you right after the show. It's TADS, right? Target Acquisition Designation System. That's what the hearing has to be transformed into, and the creature that you're hoping to track. So you are now a rodent that's figured out how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And even that is beyond the abilities of Darwinism, because they believe bats evolved from some kind of a rodent with four legs.
Mm-hmm.
So if that were true, you would have very bad legs before you had good wings.
Yeah.
And the whole story is about survival advantage. So you've got a species that can no longer run because its legs are becoming wings and they want it somehow to survive. Anyway, you're this creature and you're hoping to track another creature that's flying or in the sea, swimming somewhere. Oh, wait a minute. That's a violation, right? It's not like the rodent with wings now wants to track some insect. It's not like that.
Yeah.
There's no foresight. There's no guidance. There's no intention. There's no target. So regardless, there's some creature out there, an insect, that you're needing to track. And if you're going to eat it, you got to hear it. But let's say it's not making any noise. It's just sitting in the water or it's gently floating down from a tree branch. So you have to now, as this creature that doesn't know such an ability is possible, you have to evolve the ability to emit a loud sound, loud enough to generate feedback and echo off of the creature that you didn't even know you wanted to eat or was out there.
Yeah, and hope that you don't go deaf.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know that generating a loud sound will produce an echo. You don't know that. You don't know that the echo needs to be processed mathematically. Imagine the equations that need to be solved for a flying bat to track, like sonar in water, like radar, echolocate to track another creature that's flying and intercept it. I mean, the math is unbelievable.
Amazing. Yeah.
So you evolve that ability to generate a loud sound. You really don't know why, but you do it. And your ears, it turns out, or in the case of a dolphin or a whale.
Yeah, their jaws.
Your jaws are not properly tuned as a receiver, an antenna, and the bat's ears are not sensitive enough to pick up the echo, so the bat's ears have to become more sensitive. Yeah. And there's that snag that you mentioned.
Yeah, the ears become more sensitive. The loud emission of sound causes the bats to go deaf.
Yeah. So the only bats capable of actually hearing the echo are all
deaf.
They
all go deaf.
Right. And they've lost their survival advantage.
So much for natural selection.
Every which way you look at this, for evolution, virtually every major hurdle is an extinction level event. It
exactly.
just can't work. So, Fred, we're out of time. What I'd love to do on a part two is to look at this article in the journal Science and see their reaction when they find out that there are similarities in bats and whales in 200 different genes. And they think they all originated with no plan, no purpose,
yep.
coincidentally in 200 different genes.
And, you know, we've been talking on this show for years about convergent evolution and how it's a big problem for common descent.
And homology.
Exactly.
What a mess.
It's a mess. And, you know, that's always been a problem for the evolutionists. But this one is actually even worse. The big takeaway from this story, and we'll talk about it more next week, is they've always relied on the genome. It's kind of like that dark matter where they can hide convergence underneath it in their own minds.
Inside
because
our DNA.
They don't care. They're like, okay, different environments are going to bring about these similar traits over time if things work out that way. And they can kind of hide it under the covers of the genome. What they did not expect is that the genome itself, the DNA sequences, are the same in a lot of the locations between these totally different organisms. So how does natural selection actually see DNA? It can't.
Natural selection cannot see the DNA. This is a brilliant insight that evolutionists pretend they never noticed.
Yeah.
Natural selection, that's like if a cheetah has babies and one of the babies in the litter is a little faster. And you say, okay, by a set of circumstances, maybe that one will have a better survival advantage. And so you're bigger, stronger offspring might be selected, natural selection.
Yeah.
Okay.
It can only select organisms that cannot see at the genetic level. And so they would have never imagined.
So wait, natural selection, let me understand this, cannot look inside the animal if it's selecting a cheetah because it's faster. It's not looking inside all these cheetahs.
Yeah.
To find one that has a DNA sequence of a certain pattern. It doesn't do that.
Yeah.
It can't even select for an organ. It can only select for the animal,
exactly.
The organism.
Yeah. It has to select the entire package. So they could always imagine in their minds that, oh, somehow convergence can work because it's hidden underneath this gray matter of the genome. But for it to be specific sequences, specific programming codes, to be the same ones in bats and whales and dolphins. That's what's so amazing about this recent study that they have. That, you know, all this data that's coming out, when you first showed it to me, I'm like, this is super cool. Because they always hid, again, behind the natural selection of the entire organism and how these things can happen to converge over millions of years.
Right.
You know, they're so, deep time.
So when you have, Fred, you're a programmer. I used to program. I worked for McDonnell Douglas in the simulation department. I studied artificial intelligence at Arizona State University, vision systems, worked at Microsoft for a while, program manager. If you give 10 programmers a project to write some code, 1,000 lines of code, the 10 programmers are all going to produce the same lines of code?
They're not. It's going to be, you know, quite a bit different. There's not going to be two programmers, say, out of 100 that somehow converge on the same programming steps.
In fact, at ASU, when they handed out their programming assignments, if two students turned in the same function, it flagged it and they said, you're cheating.
Yeah, exactly. They get caught for plagiarism because it can't happen by chance.
Right.
It really can't.
Right.
And we're talking about specific instruction sequences.
Yes.
And that's what they found in this Preston gene and others when they looked at, you know, the actual DNA. Now that we're mapping out entire genomes or lots of the genome for different animals.
Yeah.
They're finding out all this stuff and how it's just ripping to shreds the tree of life of evolution.
And it's so fun. It's an opposite problem of their orphan genes, where they sequence the genomes of, let's say, 10 species of ants, and 5% of all the genes of ants, they're all ants, they're just different kinds of ants, 5% of all their genes are totally unrelated to the other ant species, totally, completely unrelated, which blows their mind. They have no explanation for orphan genes. There are more orphan genes than there are genes that they think are somehow related. And now, if that were true, if evolution had such a tendency to create wildly different, unrelated genes for no reason at all in little ant species, why in the world do bats and whales have virtually identical coding in their genome?
It's the opposite. And it's like, you know, God has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But, you know, really, it's just, it's design. I mean, it just screams out design.
It's brilliance. It's creativity. It's fun. God, Jesus Christ, is the designer, as the Apostle John wrote, that in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and nothing was made but that which the Word has made.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus Christ is the creator of Genesis chapter 1.
Yep.
And this is all his brilliance.
It is. It's so astounding. Yeah. It really is. It's cool.
So, Fred, thank you so very much.
Bob.
Hey, September is coming. It's our telethon month to keep Bob and Yurt Live and Real Science Radio on the air and on the internet and on Spotify and all those different outlets. Now people are saying, Alexa, open Bob and Yurt Live, and the program starts playing. So this September, it's right around the corner. If you can possibly help, you can go to our website, rsr.org, click on the store, and you can make a donation one time or perhaps monthly, which helps tremendously. You could get some of our science resources. And by doing this, not only can you help yourself, your own edification, your own growth, and those around you, but you can help us reach many more people with the gospel and with the truth of our Creator God. So, for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.